We won with virtually every category, so it's just been an amazing evening.
From the beginning, I've said that I would continue on as long as there was a viable path to victory. Tonight, I'm sorry to say, that path has been foreclosed.
Just so you understand, Ted Cruz, I don't know if he likes me or if he doesn't like me, but he is one hell of a competitor.
But with boundless optimism for the long-term future of our nation, we are suspending our campaign.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Boy, we got a lot to talk about today. Gonna say holy macaroni right about now, and just so Ted Cruz knows, I'm pretty sure Donald Trump doesn't like you.
No, I think he was wondering if Cruz likes him.
I think it's a mutual hate fest.
I had the weirdest dream. I mean, I dreamt that this lunatic megalomaniac hairpiece actually ran for president and won the Republican nomination. Thank God.
You should go home and go back to bed,
yeah.
Steve.
I thought it was just a dream, because that's the kind of thing that can really frighten a fella.
Should we tell him or not?
No. Okay. I wouldn't tell him.
All right, so coming up here in about 10 minutes, Elise Glink's going to be on. We'll talk about some money. Elise knows money. She also knows if you'll have any in 6 months or so when the election is running out, because right now your choices are not great. You know, your choices are maybe a nice Nova Scotia extended vacation. Maybe not.
Extended meaning 4 years?
Maybe eight. Okay. You never know. Pat Brady in the 7 o'clock hour. The reason I'm mentioning Pat is because I like him. And I lost a bet. It's 6:11. I'm glad you're here. This is show number 642. At Cochran Show on Twitter. Facebook.com/Steve Cochran Show. 312-981-7200. Here's your mom text question of the day. Biggest lie you ever told your mom?
Oh.
Biggest lie you ever told. It's time to confess. It's time to come clean. It's time for you to admit your sins. Time for you, you know, your mom may be listening, but it's time for you. You're an adult now. It's time for you to just get on a show and say, listen, mom,
blank.
I didn't really avoid trying to hit a cat after driver's ed and run into a road sign and snap off the road sign and damage the family car. There was no cat.
And that's not even the worst of it.
That was my story.
So this is like disappointing.
You made that up?
This is like disappoint your mom day then.
No, it's not disappointing. Mom will feel better about it because she'll hear the truth.
I think we've all done something, though, with our mom's car. I mean, I think that's probably safe to say.
I'm not kidding. I left driver's ed. I was going 75 miles an hour because I was cool. And I went around a corner and I fishtailed into a road sign. I snapped off the road sign. I can still vividly see the road sign spinning through the air. It stabbed into the ground, the corner of the road sign. After it snapped off when flying and stabbed itself into the ground of a hot cheerleader I was trying to go out with. And it's a really bad way to meet her. And I pulled off to the side of the road, and I remember my father showing up because it was his car. And I was fine. The car was not.
How was the cheerleader?
The cheerleader wasn't there.
Okay.
My father showed up, and I just remember him getting out of the car, shaking his head. The worst thing a dad can do. Got out of his car, shook his head, couldn't have been more disgusted with me, walked over, talked to the cop, got back in his car and left. Left me on the side of the road.
Well, okay, now wait. Have you told her the story, or is this the first time you're ever mentioning it?
I never told her.
Okay.
Yeah, I never told her.
Okay. This is mom number one.
Well, this is the woman. Yeah, this is my mom. The woman that raised me.
We just want, you know, to be clear.
Well, it does get a little confusing.
Yeah.
I don't know that I have told any big lies to my birth mother. For you people who are new listeners to the show, I was adopted and I reunited with my birth mother because she lost a bet about, it'll be 13 years ago. Come on.
Right. And that's the mom who comes on with us every now and again.
Right, because the other mom's dead.
Yeah.
It'd be very tough to book her.
Steve.
Right. I seem to think she'd just like laugh at you if you told her something. She'd just laugh.
Yeah, oh yeah, I think so. Laugh and point.
Yeah.
But the powers, and Mary can speak to this, the powers of mom to recognize a child's BS are immense.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
So you know when your kid's lying to you.
Oh, yeah. They don't look you in the eye, get their body language.
And the idea that I would have destroyed the family car to avoid hitting a cat seemed preposterous, too. Even though I would never hurt an animal, it's just, you know, come on.
It just sounds weird.
There's lots of cats. So anyway, I lied to my mom. I lied to my mom, and I just want to apologize to her in heaven. Sorry, Mom.
Oh, now? Oh. Well, kind of the scapegoat way out of it.
Well, it's a text question. I'm kicking it off. At least it works for the material in the show. I don't know if I had not thought about this text question. I don't know if I would have even admitted it today. But I know she feels better. Biggest and I know she's talking to people in heaven now trying to get me in down the road. Down the road, Dave. No hurry there.
Oh, I understand that. Yeah. No, we hope not.
So Andre and I don't have to play because our moms are still with
oh,
us.
Oh, you absolutely have to play.
They're listening.
You absolutely have to play. And they both know whatever lies you're going to confess to today. So it's fine. It's good for you to get them off your chest. At 6:15, I will continue tonight to try to avoid talking about the obvious elephant with the hairpiece in the room.
Woo!
Woo!
Ow! Love that money!
He's one heartbeat away, kids. Money. Donald Trump, one heartbeat away from the presidency. Whose heartbeat? Hillary's. You get her on a low-fiber diet just to make this thing competitive. This is a perfect time to not be a hardcore Republican or a hardcore Democrat because you can stand back and go, what the hell happened? Here's your choice. Punch yourself in the Adam's apple or smash your toe with a hammer. That's what you got for the general election coming up.
How interesting is this, though? I mean, I don't think anyone...
Interesting? No.
I think it's extremely interesting.
Well, I got to talk to you about your definition of interesting because I'm going to go with frightening. And it takes a lot to scare me. 6:21, Elise Glink is here. Nobody knows money like Elise Glink. She has all the money. She has all the money, but she hasn't kept it. She's willing to share it with the rest of us. And good morning to you.
And good morning to you.
Sun came up this morning.
Yeah, you know, the world isn't ending. Not yet. We'll have to see what Mr. Trump has in store for all of us.
All right, so one of the duties of the President of the United States, everybody thinks the President of the United States is, you know, the can do anything he wants at any time, which isn't true. There are arguably 7 or 8 powers of the presidency that matter most that are within the president's power on a day-to-day basis. One of those things is to be a steward of the economy. Now, that's largely an advisory role, correct?
Yeah, the president, there's this whole myth that the Federal Reserve Bank, for example, can actually move levers in the economy and fix everything. And we've seen that they can do some things, but their powers are limited. And the same is true for the president. There are some things that the president can put into place. There are some shovel-ready jobs don't even happen quite as quickly as you would want them to. But eventually some things can happen. But it isn't a be-all, end-all fix to the economy.
For instance, the House of Representatives has to fund bills. So if a bill passes in Congress, the House of Representatives has to say, okay, here's the money for whatever that's going to cost to make that happen. And then the president has the veto power of approving or disapproving. But the president can't just go, I'm going to take $1 trillion and move it to the Trump Tower in New York City. That can't happen.
No, it's interesting. I spent some time yesterday thinking about the economic plans of our two likely candidates. Mm-hmm. Not that Sanders is completely up, but let's just call him out for right now.
Mm-hmm.
And Trump seems to have a plan. Obviously, it's called Make America Great Again because we've all heard that, and it's going to be huge. But it's
I've got two hats. I've got two Trump hats. I got it in red and in white.
Ooh, you're fancy.
Yeah, Stanley.
I would say that his whole plan is about retail. This is what he knows, right? Retail and the hospitality industry. And so a little bit of real estate mixed in there. And he seems to, if you look on his website and you try and delve into what he's all about, Trump seems to be about lowering taxes and fixing the Veterans Administration and then maybe lowering taxes some more. And that's how he's going to do it. And if you look on his website for any detail on how he's going to grow the American economy, he doesn't give you any. There's really nothing there. There's some more detail on taxes and lowering taxes. Nothing really on how he's going to do it. And you compare that to what Hillary Clinton is talking about, which in my mind is a lot more of what President Obama has been doing, but maybe not, you know, maybe quite not to the left as Bernie Sanders would have liked her to go. But she's out there talking about very detailed information about sharing profits and using tax code to get companies to share profits with their employees, working on raising the minimum wage, doing more infrastructure building, which I actually think this country needs quite a lot of. Have you seen our
desperately,
bridges lately?
Of course.
And, right, clean energy, science and medical research. She's going to close some corporate tax loopholes, try and figure out a way to make college more affordable. And so she actually has gotten into the details, whether that's a cheerleading role or she's our, you know, just creating a big picture that everybody can kind of fill in the gaps. It's a little more detailed than what we're seeing from Mr. Trump.
The impact on the world economy, but, well, you know, frankly, it does start with last night. But if we wait and say it's Hillary versus Trump and we go in through the summer and into November, if I am running a Western friendly nation, if I'm Angela Merkel or if I'm David Cameron or if I'm whomever we deal with, you know, whoever's running Japan these days, what is my sense of making economic deals with the United States this summer prior to this election? Am I going to be on hold now?
I think you have to be a little worried because if you know, you've got Trump, what he talks about is the China deal, China trade pact, and how none of it's fair and it can't stay. You know, there's got to be U.S.-China trade reform. And, you know, when you have trade pacts that multiple countries have signed and have been ratified across the world and you start saying that you're unilaterally going to pull them, I think that's very terrifying for anybody that wants to be a trade partner with you. And I think our world is just a little bit too integrated for that to be an effective economic approach.
Yeah, and Hillary Clinton's been disingenuous about this as well because she was for TPP. She did the old Kerry move. She was for TPP before she was against TPP and OPP and various other PPs. So going forward with this, I completely agree with what you're saying, and it's good to hear you bring facts to the table because generally I just say things. But the fact of the matter is an integrated world economy is where we live, and as Orion Samuelson and I were talking about yesterday, you're not going to put that genie back in the bottle.
Yeah, there's no getting rid of the internet. Right. This is, you know, this myth that parents like tell themselves at night, like tomorrow we're going to wake up and our kids are going to talk to us at the dinner table again. Just not happening. So you have to look at world trade and how things are integrated. And every time you pull a lever like that, something else happens. Like you can look at NAFTA and you can look at our trade with Latin America and you can say, well, you know, we took good paying American jobs and we moved them south of the border. Okay, well, there are probably millions and millions of Mexicans who are not trying to get into our country again because they actually have jobs there that feed their families.
Right.
So and that's just one, whatever you think about that and whatever side you come down on, that's just one little answer and one little cost and reaction that you have to calculate and multiply on a multilateral scale. It's almost unimaginable to think that we're going to make everything we need in this country by ourselves. And so that, in effect, means we have to trade with somebody.
Yeah, and so people understand, too, your president doesn't have the power to cancel a treaty. That's a congressional issue as well. So you did all this blowhard nonsense from everybody that said, on my first day, I'm going to cancel this and I'm going to cancel that. It doesn't work that way.
No, in the first 100 days in office, I mean, we saw, you know, the next president, Democrat or Republican or other, I'll give, you know, the Green Party a little bit of a throw there, they're going to probably have to deal with some pretty serious economic challenges. And one of those challenges is that mortgage interest rates and interest rates in general have been at or near zero and are going negative to a certain degree. And negative interest rates are not good for anybody in the economy. And whoever comes in may have to deal with that. We're already seeing negative interest rates in Japan and in Europe and in some places in Latin America. And so when you have negative interest rates, it causes a whole other wheel to start spinning. And that could end up with us back into a recession. We're at near zero growth right now. So there's a very delicate walk to walk. And I'm personally don't think that it needs a hammer. I think you definitely need some kid gloves to deal with it.
All right. So here's your homework. And next week we can talk about this. Your homework is, and it goes to your own family as well. It's not May, it's July, or it's August, or it's September. What are you recommending? Or put your crystal ball out, get your crystal ball out, put a funky hat on, and look ahead to August by next week and tell us you're going to be conservative, you're going to do this or that with your money, you recommend this or that, or you recommend waiting and seeing, which is obviously an option as well, in regards to Hillary and Trump.
All right, the two worst. Go get that. I'm going to polish my crystal ball right now. It's going to take me a whole week.
I'm sorry. When I said Hillary and Trump together, it hit me again that that's going to be the choice. All right, listen. Great talking to you. Hold the line. That's Elise Glink, and we appreciate her time.
We'll have you practice this next time, either President Trump or President Clinton.
I think I just threw up my mouth a little bit.
Sorry.
6:29. We're back with a big story next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720
WGN Chicago.
Get some of the sound of Indiana Hoosier sound in just a second. Before we do that, helpful texters pointing out that my negative comments about Trump haven't stopped him yet. I salute Donald Trump for doing the impossible, and that's pulling a hairpiece out of his hat and actually becoming the Republican nominee. It is what it is. And I will not, I'm telling you right now, the only thing I'm ready to declare this morning, I will not. I can promise you this, on any level you choose to score me on, I will not vote for Donald Trump.
Okay.
Not now, not ever.
Never.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to write that down. Because I was confused about where,
yeah, I know
where
you
stood.
Know where I stood. Yeah. I just want to make sure people understand that I'm fairly firm on this. Not now, not ever. Let's go to the texters. I may have told my mother that I needed mouthwash in high school, not because I was smoking, but because all the kids were making fun of my bad breath. I may have told her that the dog broke the porcelain statue she had from her grandmother, and it wasn't me playing tag inside the house. And when I locked my keys inside the car once and broke the window trying to open it, I told her someone threw a rock because they were trying to steal my phone. So, here's your warm-up. And see if this makes sense in order. Okay, these texts. Texters, by the way, the question of the day for moms is fairly straightforward. Biggest lie you ever told your mom. Time to come clean. Time to be clean on this. Time to open up. Time to let mom off the hook. And then when she looks at you like, you're stupid, I knew that. Just know that moms know everything on some level. And Mary, I haven't forgotten, you and Andrea will both be revealing lies you told your mom.
I thought this was just a texter. This is for the listeners.
No. You can text it in if you want, but you got to reveal it too.
How about lies my kids told me that I figured out?
You can do both.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Texter writes, I told my mom I was sleeping at my friend's house. She told her mom she was sleeping at my house. Neither mom called each other to check. Mm-hmm. We ended up going to a Billy Idol concert.
Yeah.
Not related to this text. I convinced my mom that the condom she found in the washer after my laundry was in there wasn't mine.
Oh, God. That's just gross.
I was 16 at the time, grew up in a very conservative household. Not related to this text. No, mom, I love her. She's not pregnant.
Oh.
Those three texts are not related. Just so we're clear. Lies you told your mother. Clear in the air. For Mother's Day.
So wait, with the last lie, was she pregnant? She was pregnant then.
You'll have to wait for this fall season.
Oh.
That's the cliffhanger. All right, let's go to the tape. Ted Cruz was on the warpath yesterday morning and obviously leading up to yesterday's vote in Indiana. Oh, and by the way, thanks, Indiana. Nice work. Ted Cruz yesterday had some choice words for Donald Trump long before he conceded his election run last night. And I think it sounded like this.
This man is a pathological liar. He doesn't know the difference between truth and lies. He lies practically every word that comes out of his mouth. And in a pattern that I think is straight out of a psychology textbook, his response is to accuse everybody else of lying. He accuses everybody on that debate stage of lying. And it's simply a mindless yell. Whatever he does, he accuses everyone else of doing. The man cannot tell the truth, but he combines it with being a narcissist. A narcissist at a level I don't think this country's ever seen.
Wow. Andre just handed me a note, which I completely agree with. Pot, say hi to the kettle.
Yeah, okay, kettle.
Here's the deal. Ted Cruz, I'm glad Ted Cruz is out. The reason I wanted Ted Cruz to stay in the race is to force a contested convention. That's not going to happen now. That's the only reason I was upset about Ted Cruz leaving. Ted Cruz leaving is not a bad thing. Ted Cruz leaving is a good thing. Now, if Ted Cruz would leave the public arena completely, it'd be great. By the way.
You mean leave the country and go back to Canada?
Is that where he's from?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we should do that to Canada. They haven't won a Stanley Cup in years. They have their own problems.
Yes.
By the way, Ted Cruz's wife, I don't know Ted Cruz's wife. She could be a good person. She could be a bad person. I don't know. I mean, she married Ted Cruz for whatever reason. I know a lot of people. You and I know a lot of people that end up, and it's, sadly, it's almost always wives. But we know a lot of people that end up marrying someone where the rest of the world looks at that person and goes, "What? You seem like a nice person. What are you a hostage?
Right.
What are you doing in that situation?"
Like a blink twice kind of a thing.
So Heidi Cruz, who gave up a pretty good job at, wasn't she working for Goldman Sachs?
Yes.
Gave up a pretty good job at Goldman Sachs and then was had a picture of herself tweeted out in comparison to supermodel, whatever her name is, Melania.
Mm-hmm.
And then had to deal with the National Enquirer story about the affairs her husband had, which, by the way, I still find it hard to believe that more than one woman would have been coerced into sleeping with Ted Cruz. And then last night, she's on stage, and the father comes over for a group hug, and Ted elbows his wife in the head, doesn't stop to apologize. The hug circle got a little bigger, and then he bonked her on the head like he had, you know, he just like just bang, hit her with his head.
Yeah, it happened like three times.
Hasn't a woman been through enough?
It was terrible.
It's bizarre because you bring up a good point. She not only worked for Goldman Sachs, but she also she worked under in the Bush White House. She was an economic policy director.
Very brave woman. There's a lot going on.
And she spoke at the City Club about a month ago and gave just a wonderful speech.
Well, you know, so don't misunderstand. We'll do more of this after traffic. Don't misunderstand this. I'm not unhappy that Ted Cruz is out. I'm quite happy that Ted Cruz is out because Ted Cruz, based on Carly Fiorina stage diving and whacking his wife in the head with elbows and in his skull, Ted Cruz could have killed every woman in America by the time this is over.
It's true.
At 6:47, we go to Mary and then more sound from Indiana. Did I mention this? Thanks, Indiana. To call Jim Gaffigan, get Gaffigan on this morning to try to defend the Hoosiers. Indiana did not come through. And Bernie Sanders is still in this thing. At 7:10, I'll give you things to think about at work today, which may make you want to call in sick.
You know, I know all the candidates, after stumping for this long, and this is a long, exhausting campaign trail, lose their voices and they get tired. But doesn't Bernie Sanders, with every race, it's like he loses his voice a little more.
I'm amazed he's standing upright.
Wow.
I mean, the guy's 73?
I'd be exhausted.
I think he's 73 years old.
Yeah.
We'll get to that, by the way, at 7:10. The question is, who's going to run with Trump? Who's going to run with Hillary? Because they'll both be 70 next year, and the fact is, they might die in their first 4 years. I'm not trying to be funny. I'm not trying to be salacious. I'm not trying to be an insurance actuary. I'm telling you, the vice presidential choice is dramatically important. Everybody talked about how important it was with McCain. McCain was, what, 67 or something?
Mm-hmm.
He was a kid compared to these two geezers.
It's probably one of the main reasons why I know everybody wants to see everyone team up, maybe Bernie and Hillary. That will never happen.
Not going to happen. Nope.
Probably for that reason.
And at 6:53, let's go through some more of the sound of Indiana. Ted Cruz was trying to laugh off the fact that Donald Trump kept responding to a photo that showed his father, Rafael Cruz, supposedly standing next to Lee Harvey Oswald. Photoshopped or not, here's Ted.
I guess I should go ahead and admit, yes, my dad killed JFK. He is secretly Elvis, and Jimmy Hoffa is buried in his backyard. You know, Donald's source for this is the National Enquirer. The National Enquirer is tabloid trash, but it's run by his good friend David Pecker, the CEO, who's endorsed Donald Trump. Donald Trump has used David Pecker's National Enquirer to go after my family. It was also the National Enquirer that went after my wife, Heidi. That just spread lies, blatant lies. But I guess Donald was dismayed because it was a couple of weeks ago the Enquirer wrote this idiotic story about JFK. And Donald was dismayed that the folks in the media weren't repeating this latest idiocy, so he figured he'd have to do it himself.
Well, Ted's not wrong about the idiocy part. Ted Cruz was asked by NBC's Hallie Jackson, fine reporter, by the way, NBC's Hallie Jackson, if he would back Donald Trump. Hallie Jackson's been asking the question for a long time. Our friend Chuck Todd tried to ask it for about 10 minutes last Sunday on Meet the Press. And Ted wouldn't answer. And if you notice last night when Cruz got out, he did not mention Donald Trump. So much for unity. Here's that exchange with the reporter.
If anyone has seen the movie Back to the Future 2, the screenwriter says that he based the character Biff Tannen on Donald Trump. A caricature of a braggadocious, arrogant buffoon who builds giant casinos with giant pictures of him everywhere he looks. We are looking, potentially, at the Biff Tannen presidency. I don't think the people of America want that. I don't think we deserve that. I don't think Hoosiers want that.
Senator, these are some of the strongest words you've used against Donald Trump yet. You know I've been with you. I've heard you talk about him. Today feels different for you. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to ask you a question, and you're going to say I sound like a broken record, and you're going to say that Donald Trump did not get to
12:37. Well, if you sound like a broken record, someone else have a question?
But Senator, why not say
you've asked one already, Hallie. You've
completely blows her off. Completely pulls a Trump, and he blows her off over and over and over again. Frankly, my favorite part of that cut was the Biff Tannen presidency.
Right.
Ted Cruz doesn't have friends, so Ted Cruz spends a lot of time watching movies, memorizing them, and trying to awkwardly work them into conversation.
Yeah, and he picks a movie from 1985.
Hillary Clinton, you may remember, in a debate a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, tried to say, and by the way, I don't trust Hillary. She's lied for years. But she tried to say that there needs to be alternative energy options, or a lot of people in coal country are going to lose their jobs and companies are going to go out of business. And what do we know? Coal companies had a precipitous fall in value and are shutting down left and right. That's a huge deal in Pennsylvania and West Virginia and, you know, all across the country, wherever coal is. So here's Hillary Clinton sitting down with some coal company folks trying to explain herself.
Now, some of you may be wondering, how can I say all this? You know, because here in Ohio a few weeks ago during the Ohio primary, it sounded like I said something differently about coal miner jobs. To put it plainly, I misspoke. It's one reason why I took this trip, to say that directly to the people who are affected, to make sure you know where I stand, because I would never disrespect the people here.
And the thing that is going to stop Hillary from becoming the president more than anything else is her absolute inability to own it when she lies or own it when she screws up. I don't believe this is a lie. I believe this is a screw up. But look the people in the eyes who are losing their jobs, and you go, you know, I talk a lot and talk a lot all day. And sometimes when I say things, I don't say them the right way. I don't put the words in the right order. Now, if that sounds like an excuse, I apologize, because I understand why those words would hurt or frighten you. I can't imagine what you're going through. It's got to be extremely difficult. But I'm here to tell you, if I'm going to be president, I have your back. I will do whatever it takes to try to make sure that the jobs lost will be replaced by new jobs. Not, I misspoke. This is why people don't like her.
An apology goes a long way, too. I'm sorry I said that.
Ugh. Meanwhile, your crazy Uncle Bernie, he's not done yet.
What is extremely exciting for me, and that is that in primary after primary, caucus after caucus, we end up winning the vote of people 45 years of age or younger. And that is important because it tells me that the ideas that we are fighting for are the ideas of the future of America and the future of the Democratic Party.
Guy won last night. He won again. The system's rigged. We'll talk about that in a few minutes as well. He's not wrong about that, but the system is what it is. But I'm not going to stop until every home has a nice split pea, or a lentil. Every home should have soup. See, it's all about soup. I think the great philosopher Ron White sums up campaign 2016 best. Ron, you know Ron White? The great philosopher Ron White. There's the great Greek philosophers.
Well, Socrates, Plato, Aristotle, yeah.
Right. And then when it comes to campaign 2016, there's comedian Ron White.
But let me tell you something, folks. You can't fix stupid.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
I got a crazy bird attacking my house.
Oh, no.
And this bird keeps flying into the window.
Because it thinks it sees itself in the reflection, maybe?
Either that or it's some sort of, you know, bird trying to, you know, end it all. I don't know.
I seriously think it's like mating season or something, and they think they see each other in the window, and they're trying to...
Hey, girl.
Something like that, maybe.
Are you sure it's not a woodpecker?
I don't think I said it was or wasn't a woodpecker. So I figure I fixed the bird problem, and I'm a genius. And then it's a few hours later, and the bird's now banging off a different window.
I was going to say, yeah.
And I think it's the same bird. Because all the other birds are laughing at him and pointing their wings at him. And look at Claude. I don't know why the bird's named Claude. By the way, I think my fancy reflective tape trick worked.
Oh, good.
Yeah, because there was no bird thumping yesterday. And the deal is, it's just this reflective tape you could buy like at a party store. Looks like just fancy decorating tape. You know, the fancy decorating tape.
Yeah. You put X's on the window?
Yeah, you just tape it in an X across the window. Okay. Or you tape strips down and just let it flutter and it scares the bird away. The phrase bird brain, there's a reason it came from actual fact. So,
well,
now watch, I'll go back today. There'll be a whole flock attacking my window.
he'll have removed the tape.
Before I get to a bit of a manifest, a bit of a manifesto, on what happened last night and where we go from here. A couple more texts to your mom. These are texts on the biggest lie you ever told your mom. Dave, you can get in on this too. I told my lie right off the top of the show. So think about it. Here's one. I know Bill Clinton's biggest lie. He told his mother he didn't have sex with that woman. Mom, I wasn't curious about... This is a lie that a listener told a mom. Mom, I wasn't curious about my sexuality, as I explained, when you found that bra in my room. I was actually with the next-door neighbor in the shower. I wasn't curious at all.
Oh, TMI.
There's a lot of sex going on in this audience. Have you noticed that?
Yep.
Mom, the joint you found in my Marlboros, it belonged to my friends. I was just holding it for them.
Yeah, I don't think any mom ever believed that.
Oh, I think there's moms that do. I think there's moms that believe not my kid. Absolutely.
Really?
Oh, no doubt.
Really deep down believe, oh, there's no way?
How do you think you get screwed up adults? It's parents that don't think, they think their kids never did anything wrong.
Well, how about the lie about the condom in the washing machine? Well, it wasn't mine.
That, by the way, was last hour. That's not a story from Andrea's past.
No, that's not my story.
Here's another lie, that I was drinking Kool-Aid, not Singapore slings, and I just had a headache the next day. Another lie from a listener for a mom. I may have told my mom that someone hit me in the parking lot when I backed into the light pole. See, the car accident ones, those are hard to hide, and I know that because that's what I lied to my parents about. So, that's one of the things I've lied to my parents about.
But that's okay. I think that should be a pass for everybody, because when you first start to drive, everybody has a car story. They've done something to their parents.
But I literally left Driver's Ed, where they showed you the scary Driver's Ed accident film. Did they do that with you with Driver's Ed? Where they show you the car crashes and, you know, extricating bodies and... No, I'm not kidding.
Yeah,
Dave, you remember that?
Yeah. Oh, sure. Awful. See that.
To scare you straight, right?
Right.
I literally left Driver's Ed and went around a corner that I drove to school every day at, that probably had a speed limit of 25, at about 60. I'm lucky I didn't roll the car. And I fishtailed and hit this road sign, snapped the road sign off, and blamed it on a cat running in front of me that I was trying to save its life.
So the movie really, what had a big influence on you, huh? You really paid attention to that
I think that story says more about me than it does the cat. Yes, I think that's true. 717, Pat Brady will join me in a second, but a few words from me on last night and where we go from here right after Mary does this. 717. I don't know a lot this morning, but what I do know is this. I was wrong about Trump's possibilities, probabilities, and likelihood of becoming the nominee. I'm more than willing to admit he won, I lost. But I believe we all lost. Because as the Republican nominee, be careful, Democrats, what you wish for. Be careful. There's a lot of things that can happen. Hillary is in no way a shoo-in. She can't shake Bernie yet. She's absolutely not a shoo-in to beat Donald Trump. There's a million factors that will go into this between now and November. Obviously, we'll be on the air every day harping about them. But also trying to give you as much education and information so you can make a choice come this fall. One of the things that came up after last night was, what about a third party? What about a third party run? I got a lot of golf that I have to play. So
you can't do it?
No, I can't do it. But there are more calls than ever for a third party or third party run. It would have to be, at this point, someone who is A, independently wealthy, someone who is B, already really famous, because you wouldn't have the time or money to spend to get name recognition across the country, and somebody C, who really wants it. That's three tough nuts to crack. So unless you could find, say, somebody that is well-liked enough to get a Ross Perot-like number of 15 to 20% in the general election, that's the only way you could put a wedge in this election. A third-party candidate can't win. Can't win. The problem with that is, who does the third-party candidate interrupt? Do they disrupt, interrupt, and cause the loss of Donald Trump or of Hillary Clinton? And I don't think you can say that now. Michael Bloomberg, the former mayor of New York, said if Hillary Clinton's a nominee, he won't get in. That's a guy that's a Republican. Mm-hmm. Moderate Republican, but a Republican. But Bloomberg said, if Hillary's running and I don't want to screw it up for her, I'm not gonna get in. So you have to be rich, you have to be famous, you have to want it, and you have to do all those three right now. You got to announce it noon today.
Can I add a D, a letter D? You have to be liked, because think about it.
Well, but you're not going to
really
win.
Really like?
But you're not going to win.
Really like Clinton?
Did you like Ross Perot? You're not going to win. You're not running to win. You're running to disrupt. But my point is, right now, it's not clear what that disruption would mean. So in other words, if you're trying to get Hillary Clinton elected, or you're trying to get Donald Trump elected, a third-party candidate could screw it up for either one of you.
And I don't think that option is John Kasich. I don't think that's going to happen.
No, Kasich.
If he's staying in to try to that strategy.
Well, as soon as it gets to 12:37, he's out. Yeah. He's said that now. Here's what the president does, and here's where it gets a little frightening. The number one thing that comes up in regards to Trump, who is now a 50-50 shot, is commander-in-chief, the ability to commit your sons and daughters and our sons and daughters to war and in harm's way. The very sad thing for me for all of this is the people that have been the most ardent supporters of Donald Trump are the ones that will sign up for the draft first. These are the people that populate the military in a volunteer draft or a volunteer Army, Navy, Air Force, or Marines like none other. These are people who are serving this country and serving it with pride and distinction. And these are the people who have followed Trump somewhat blindly. And because of that, they will be the first thrown into any conflict he chooses to engage in. Now, you may say, hold on now, Steve, hold on. A campaign's different than actually having the job. And everybody changes when they get the job. That may be true. But from every reaction we've seen to Donald Trump and his thin skin and whatever people say to him at any given time, can you tell me you don't believe he'd commit troops to action that we don't need to commit troops to? Can you tell me he'd ever be the stand-down guy? Is he ever going to be the guy to take his foot off the pedal and say the best course of action right now for the United States is no action? Because every time you tell a plane to fly a bombing mission or sailors to go to a very dangerous area of the world and sit off the coast of some knucklehead country who's prepared to shoot at you, you're putting us in harm's way. That's what Donald Trump could do. He also has the nuclear codes. Now, this is where we got to get off his back. He is not Kim Jong-un. I don't believe in any way, shape, or form we go, I know what we'll do. We'll nuke him. First off, Trump is so concerned about himself, he wouldn't put himself in the risk of having a nuclear attack come back this way. Imagine what that would do to his hair. The president obviously has the power of appointments. The appointments are a big deal because when he assembles his cabinet controls the government and the almost 3 million jobs in the government. So those jobs affect your life and my life every single day. The people he puts in those positions are a big deal, and the people he puts in the most important positions, at defense, at Secretary of State, and others, Treasury, they will affect your life in every single way, shape, and form. Who are those people going to be? You saw who some of his foreign policy advisors were when he named them a month and a half ago. Nobody knew them, mm-hmm. or they had sketchy pasts at best. He names ambassadors. He names ambassadors to other countries. Why are ambassadors a big deal? They're the first line of relations with countries around the world. Same way with diplomats, the people that speak on behalf of the country. He can't make laws, but he can urge laws to be made. And because of that, and because of the economic policy that the president tries to control and direct, there's $2.5 trillion in the budget. He can't say, I'm going to spend $1 trillion on a nice golf course that I want to build. But he can urge money to be moved in one way or another, and he can direct through threats, intimidation, or just wild speeches. By the way, he's known for all three, that could make the market move by billions of dollars every single day. That affects your 401k, my 401k. That affects your life, no matter how much you think you are or are not in the market. He can issue executive orders, and he will. For all the grief he tried to give Obama over this, every president does it, and he will. He, of course, is in charge of our foreign policy and helped determine foreign policy. He has, there's a technical political term that needs to be used here. He has crapped all over relationships that already exist, and he has made some of them worse already. There is grave concern in Germany, in the UK, in the Far East, and in China about who he is and what he would do with the country. So those are just a snapshot of the basic powers of the presidency and why it's a big deal. And when you fold in the fact that he hasn't elucidated or explained in any way, shape, or form how he's going to get anything done from his stupid Mexican wall to anything else, it's a concern. That's why I'm concerned. That's why I've harped on this for months. That's why I say I've got no axe to grind with Donald Trump personally. He's got a beautiful family that he seems to love very much. It'd be great if he got back on TV. But he is now a 50-50 shot to be the president. And it's not good enough for me to say to you, don't come crying to me when he doesn't deliver on any of his promises when he wins. I believe he's dangerous. Not because he gets up in the morning and wants to be dangerous, but because he's not capable of handling the job. So do I believe Hillary's right for the job? Absolutely not. I never thought I'd be in a position where I'd even consider voting for Hillary Clinton because I don't trust her. I hate the fact that she stood on a tarmac and made up a story about being shot at in a combat zone and would now be commander-in-chief of the military. That's inexcusable. It's outrageous. I don't think she knows how to tell the truth now. But is she more equipped to run this government? Absolutely. You can't argue that. So if you're far right or far left, you've already made up your mind. But the vast majority of America is still in the middle, and there's a lot of Republicans and a lot of Democrats, including the people that don't like Hillary and clearly don't like Trump, who are going to weigh in on this before it's over. And don't forget the fact that we're going to have some very ugly debates. They're going to be huge ratings. They're going to be great reality TV, but very ugly debates that, again, are going to be watched not just here but by the rest of the world. So if you're a Democrat waking up this morning, be careful what you wish for. Trump is very, very, very capable of not only making Hillary Clinton crazy on the campaign trail. I mean, Hillary Clinton is somebody's grandmother. You're going to put your grandmother at that podium over there, and then you're going to put her in. And granted, this is the role she asked for. But Donald Trump has no boundaries. He will stand up there. He will point out that her husband is a man slut, that her husband cheated on her regularly, that she lied about this and lied about that and has been completely dishonest. And if he can find something he can use against her, including stuff that maybe he made up or somebody tweeted to him, he'll use that too. And once it's out in the public domain, what happens? That's what Hillary Clinton is facing. That's what America is facing. And that's what we'll have to look at. Do we need a change in politics? Yes. Has Donald Trump brought forth some of this conversation that could lead to that? Yes. But you don't start a fire to save a house. And that's my concern. We don't have time to get into it now, but who's the vice president going to be? Who is now? Here's a guy in charge of $2.5 trillion, in a manner of speaking, who couldn't keep casinos open in Atlantic City, who has massive business failures left and right, who is in civil court over his Trump University. Here's $2.5 trillion. Have fun. That's why he's dangerous. That's why I'm concerned. And for a guy that's been in public life for 35 years, early 80s, who's his wingman or his wingwoman? Can you name me one person who, over the course of the time we've known the name Donald Trump, where you go, well, that's his protege? The people closest to him are his kids and his wives. That's a good thing on paper, but anybody who wants to be president of the United States has accumulated some collection of people who want to serve with him or for him. Tell me who those people are. No. Can't name them. That's why I'm concerned. More to come, 727 on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show.
720 WGN.
Let's break from the pending Trumpocalypse for just a second. Get Pat Brady in here in just a few minutes to address, among other things. But a lot of really nice texts today, by the way, at 312-981-7200, and thank you for those. I'll put a blog up later about my rant here a few minutes ago. But in the meantime, you can always get our podcast at TuneIn on iTunes at WGNRadio.com and the WGN Radio app. And we'll put up the rant separately so you can share it with your friends, collect the full set. Pat Brady just did some TV. He'll be on with us in just a second as soon as he gets his makeup off. No different than any other day for Pat. In the meantime, let's talk this. Doug Kramer is the U.S. Small Business Administration's deputy. and a proud grad of the University of Chicago Law School. I don't want to give you the paperwork if you didn't get it. You did graduate, didn't you, Doug?
I did. I did. Barely, maybe, but I did. They gave me the paper.
Nice to talk to you again. How often do you get to Chicago?
You know, not as often as I'd like, but I do get back. I've got a lot of friends still here. I love the town. Went running down by the lake this morning. It's just it's great to be back in town.
All right, so this is National Small Business Week, and we know that small business is struggling under tremendous pressures. We also know it's the largest segment of the business economy. What do you want people to know about National Small Business Week so it's not just a cute headline and, oh, isn't that delightful?
Well, Steve, I think you led with it partially right there. I mean, each individual small business has trouble sort of galvanizing or making clear their importance. But when you add them all up, they are easily the most important and largest part of the American economy. So we want to take one week to just shine a spotlight on that. They don't get their Super Bowl halftime commercials or things like that. So we like to take a week and make people think about and remind them about the way that it is the job creation engine in the American economy, that it's really the backbone, it's the innovative part of the economy, and just make sure people focus on that importance so they don't take it for granted, because otherwise there are obstacles that would get in the way and be, as you suggested, too much of a challenge for small business.
How do we define small business? What are the parameters?
Well, that's a tricky question, and we actually have a group of economists that do it actually separately for each industry, because on the one hand, if you're a restaurant, you might be able to get by with a handful of employees, but if you're in some manufacturing spaces and you're fighting to be the small innovative company in sort of like the aerospace industry, will let you have more employees. So it varies from industry to industry.
Doug, I would assume one of the biggest issues would be money. How do you start a business? You might have a great idea, great people that are going to work with you, a good partner, but if you don't have a lot of money, how do you begin?
Well, yeah, access to credit is probably the number one thing that we focus on. And so what we at SBA do is we work with bankers all around the country to provide guarantees for small business loans. If they're going to take a chance on a new business and make a loan to a small business, they have access to SBA products that allow them to, you know, guarantee 50 to 80% of the downside risk of that loan. We did about 69,000 loans last year to businesses for about $28 billion. So, and I still don't think that solved the entire problem, but we partner with banks to provide that product to hit exactly, as you just said, that upfront credit need that small businesses have.
So you're going to be where today?
So I'm going to go over to the Chicago French Market this morning to visit a couple of good small businesses, maybe do some shopping in advance of Mother's Day, including a couple of businesses that have used some SBA assistance. Then I'm going over to the 1871 Innovation Center to see what they're working on over there, meet with some folks from the Hispanic Chamber, and then also meet with our local SBA district office today.
We're big fans of Howard Tolman, one of the key ingredients at 1871. And amidst all the doomsday national headlines about Chicago, there ought to be more people talking about 1871 and this technological hub, this brilliant startup factory, where if you want to do a startup and you've got a good idea, you can likely find all the things you need under one roof. It's a pretty cool idea.
Oh, absolutely. It's things like that that really have made our small business and entrepreneurial ecosystem the envy of the world. I mean, when I travel around and talk to folks in other countries, you've got on the one hand this focus in the United States on people, you know, having that economic freedom to start their own business, whatever it is, and then also this innovation side and this sort of collaborative nature these businesses have. And it really has helped the American economy recover from the Great Recession as well as any economy in the world. And again, does really make us the envy. And places like 1871 are just such a great example of what that opportunity, how that opportunity manifests itself.
Enjoy your day in Chicago. Welcome back. You owe anybody any money or an apology that we can pass along?
Boy, I sure wish I did. This is a nice platform to do it. But I think all my debts in Chicago are paid. They never would have let me out of town otherwise.
All right. If anybody texts us after you hang up, we'll let you know.
Well, hopefully you don't know where to find me, Steve.
Yeah, it's hard for you to hide. Thank you, Doug.
Exactly. Thanks, Steve. Have a good day.
Doug Kramer, U.S. Small Administration's Deputy Administrator. Doug Kramer, in University of Chicago law grad, says he doesn't owe you any money. I figured maybe from school he borrowed a 20 from somebody, never paid him back, that kind of deal. You know, Milt Rosenberg might be listening. Milt might have think he lent him a 20 and he owes him money.
That could be.
He wasn't
know.
In the law Milt. School, but Milt, you know, Milt's over money. University of Chicago. It's 7:46. Mary, are you ready to admit whatever your lie was to your mother, your big lie to your mother?
Oh, man. Do I have to?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I think there's more than one, but Oops, I shouldn't have said that. I think I remember one time where my mother despised motorcycles. She still does. And I went to a summer company picnic. And she said, can you get a ride home? Because she was leaving with the family. I said, sure. And I got a ride home from one of the guys I knew there on a motorcycle, like very far away with no helmet. And back then, you know, nobody wore helmets, but I was just holding on. It was
living
great.
The dream. Got your arms
living
around Mr. Tough Guy,
yeah,
Mr. Bad Boy in his leathers.
I did. He was a friend.
And what
still.
Did you tell Mom about how you got home?
I don't remember. Mm-hmm. I don't even think she asked.
Right, because she thought you wouldn't do something as silly
right.
as that.
She trusted me. Yeah. Sorry, Mom.
All right, well, coming up, we'll get more of Mary's lies and also her children lying to her that she already knew. And you're going to, do you think I'll forget, but you're going to admit whatever you lied to your mother about.
I never lied to, all right.
Andrea?
Yeah, I know.
Come on, if I had to say it, you do too.
Coming up.
Come on.
Which one is the least damaging?
That's what I had to go through too.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
So again, folks, this has been an amazing evening. I didn't expect this. I didn't expect it. And what Ted did is really a very brave thing to do and a great thing to do because we want to bring unity to the Republican Party. Yes. We have to bring unity. It's so much easier if we have it.
The Republican power base that you will see accumulating around Trump over the next few days are the biggest weasels in the party. These are the people who, behind his back, were trying to keep him from getting anywhere. They wouldn't speak out publicly. Who now want to saddle up to him because he's got a 50-50 shot at the big gig. Pat Brady joins me now. You know, I've got to admit, and you and I talked about this last night, I was wrong. I said there's not a shot in hell. There's no way this guy would ever get the nomination. I was wrong, and I admit it. He's the guy.
I agree, and I offer the same apology. And for my contest, the drink contest I offered, I will be making my $500 donation to Rags of Honor.
But nice.
There's no way I'm giving Pearson his Hawks tickets.
Very nice.
No, that's a good.
No, he didn't earn them.
He didn't. I don't think he remembered.
It's not a win-win, but it's a lose-win.
It's a win for Rags of Honor. Yeah, it's a win for Rags of Honor. You're exactly right. All right, so listen, you have been around politics your entire life. You have been a loyal Republican your entire life. Donald Trump is now representing the Republican Party in a contest that obviously we think is going to be against Hillary Clinton. What are people supposed to do?
I'm not sure. It's going to be interesting to see if he can actually offer some olive branch to people and try to unify the party. But it's pretty difficult to have the standard bearer of the party, a guy who's way outside the mainstream of Republican ideology, from foreign policy to national security to economic policy. He's not truly a Republican. So for people like me, who've been voting Republican, it's not been for individual candidates. It's been for a philosophy that I believe in, that the way the government should run and the way it should interact with its people and protect our borders. He's just out of that box, so I'm never going to vote for him.
And neither will I. There are Trump supporters who are saying this is no different than when Ronald Reagan was held up in the 80s and ridiculed and mocked as the actor.
Reagan got a million more votes than Gerald Ford.
Well, it's also political blasphemy in some ways because Ronald Reagan was a successful governor who had previously run for president.
Two-term.
Who had experience at the executive level and was fully equipped and ready to run. He wasn't the host of The Apprentice.
No, more important than that, he spent 15, 20 years traveling around the country listening to people, articulating the conservative message and refining it. And he came out in 64, which was too early when Goldwater came out. But by the time he ran, he had the message down. So it was decades of dedication to conservative principles versus Donald Trump, whose biggest donations in this state have been to Illinois Democrats.
If it is Hillary Clinton, and obviously I can't think of a scenario where it wouldn't be because of the way the math is set up, this is literally, in my lifetime, the worst choice you have to make between a guy who I think is dangerous to America and somebody who wouldn't know the truth if it walked up and said, excuse me, Hillary, I'm the truth. So this is where it's going to be a very difficult choice. On top of the fact, I mentioned this a few minutes ago, these debates are going to be ugly. They're going to be ugly and an ugly show for America for the rest of the world.
I'd heard an analyst last night saying that these will be the most watched events since the moon landing, and they will be embarrassing. He's not capable. Trump is not capable of articulating policy because he doesn't take the time to actually learn it. And the thing that scares me, and I think you're going to see some prominent Republicans peel off early on the national security foreign policy issues and go with Secretary Clinton, because this guy, Trump, is way to the left of her. He's an isolationist on trade. I mean, these issues that are the core, the bedrock of the Republican Party he doesn't believe in. And he got, he's going to get about 8% of the eligible voters to win this nomination in 8% of, in a country of 330 million. And most people just aren't where he is.
But my concern, and I want to get Andre in here, my concern is that, and by the way, I'm not saying this out of support for Hillary. You know how I feel about Hillary.
Yeah, I agree with you.
But my concern is that Trump has had the ability to fire up enough people that we don't know how many middle-of-the-road types of moderates are out there who won't buy into his message.
Hey, it's scary to me, and it's not moderates. It's the Bernie people that do not like Hillary, whose big issue, one of their big issues, is free trade, this feeling that the United States has sold its soul to other governments. And I could see some of those people coming over and supporting Trump. And if you get those two together, you've got your 50+1. Although I did see some exit polls last night that say only 13% of Bernie people would actually come out and support Trump. But it scares me to death, but I could see it happening. I don't think it's going to happen, but I could see it.
Steve alluded to earlier, he said the only hope, I guess, for Republicans who don't want to vote for Trump or support him would be a third candidate, somebody coming out of the sidelines, I guess. Who would that be?
It's too late. You have to get on the ballot to actually win and all these requirements. You got to remember, this primary has gone a lot longer than normal. It's usually over earlier. So all the filing requirements where you'd have to like co-opt a third party to get on the ballot, the filing days are either past or are coming up quickly. So we're not going to have a third party. Also, if the people like me decide to get behind a third party candidate, I think that will completely destroy the Republican Party even more than it's been destroyed so far, because Trump's going to blame the loss on the establishment.
Well, the other point that I tried to make was that the Ross Perot wedge that cost George Bush the election in 1992, getting somewhere 15, 17, 18% of the vote, to do that, you've got to be rich, famous, and want it, and you've got to get in today to have any sort of impact in any area, even for the few places you might be able to legally wedge your way in. I don't know who that person is.
I don't either, but remember what Ross Perot ran on in 92? It was anti-NAFTA. And did you hear Trump's, I thought, pathetic speech last night? When you win a nomination, you think he'd be fired up. I think he's, like you've been saying along, the dog that caught the bus. But it was NAFTA.
Yeah.
NAFTA, NAFTA, NAFTA. And that's exactly what we're going to hear. And Hillary doesn't have a response to that because her husband was the one that put NAFTA through.
Yeah, well, she's going to have to go directly against several 90s policies of Bill Clinton to have any hope of winning over a large chunk of the people that don't know what they're going to do.
Well, particularly the Bernie folks, because part of that equation, too, is welfare reform. A lot of the Bernie folks don't like what happened, although it turned out to be very productive and it was bipartisan. A lot of the liberals don't like it.
I made the point earlier, and I keep harping on this, and I'd use blunt language because you have to. They're both going to be 70 next year. They could die in their first 4 years. The vice presidency is more important than it was when McCain picked Palin or anybody else in the past, including Reagan when he was elected, and he was an old guy then. I know 70 isn't old anymore, and I know there are a lot of very healthy, vital 70-year-olds. Fact is, you're 70, you're not 50. Who's going to run with Trump when I can't tell you a single person who he's brought along as somebody he's mentored or somebody he's sided with through the years? The only people that talk to him regularly are his family.
I don't know. And I think we're going to see quickly with this convention that's 7 or 8 weeks out, what kind of institutional support he's going to get. I fear that a lot of people aren't going to show. The elected officials just don't want to be there and be seen with him. And the money might dry up. So to answer your question, I don't know who would want to get on that train.
That's the thing. And there's a short list for Hillary, not a lot of well-known people, but Tim Kaine and other people who may help her. Well, on that happy note, can I just say what I said at the top of the show? Thanks, Indiana.
Hey, you know what? Don't give up. We still, the Republican Party in the last 8 years, we won 900 seats, state House races, 12 governorships, House and the Senate. We still are the conservative party, and we're still winning below the presidential race. I got to be positive, Steve. You know me, right?
Yeah, and later we'll identify what color the sky is in your world.
I tried.
Thanks. We'll see you on TV. I know you're doing a bunch of TV today.
All right. Thanks, buddy.
Pat Brady. And again, it's Pat_Brady at Next Generation Strategies.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me good.
Final Coach Q for a little bit at least, coming up at 8:40. That's about 25 minutes from now. Dean Richards joins us now. You ever lie to your mom?
Yeah, probably.
Okay, before this segment's over, you have to tell us what it was.
Oh.
That's the text question today. Biggest lie you ever told your mother? Here's some texters, Dean. It wasn't a baseball that hit my brother in the neck. It was a hickey. Mom, I'm going camping for the weekend. I actually went to Virginia Beach and got married to a man she never met. Yikes. How do you explain that one, by the way? Because that's a lie that's not going to go away.
That's a big one.
Came home from a party, walked in hearing screams coming from my parents' bedroom. Mm. Didn't know what was wrong. Walked in. Yep, they were doing it. Next morning, my mother said that that when the door is closed, there's family business going on.
I don't understand what you mean by they were doing it, Steve. What does that mean?
They were
talking.
Dean, when a mommy and daddy love each other very much. Another texter at 19. The beer in the truck? That's my friend's. That's not mine. Worst lie to my mom, I can assure you there was no party here last night. Mom then asked, why is your friend Larry sleeping in your sister's wagon in the garage?
Well, what'd she still have a wagon for anyway, please?
Yeah. You want to tell us now or you want to tell us after?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was very young. I started my lying career very young.
Well, good for you. You're focused.
I have three older brothers, and one of my older brothers. You know, when you're the younger brother, mm-hmm. You are often the punching bag, science mm-hmm. experiment. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And one of my brothers got me particularly angry at him for something that he had done to me. So I carved his name into our very expensive china cabinet.
Whoa.
Carved his name in it.
Whoa, like Bob was here, that kind
Bill.
Of vibe?
Yeah, my brother Bill. I just carved the word Bill into the china cabinet and then specifically made a point of going to my mother and saying that Bill just carved his name in the china cabinet.
How old were you?
I might have been 8.
Did you ever crack?
Yeah, it was pretty obvious because Bill,
because you spelled it wrong.
Bill was older than I am. He's older than I am. His hand, his writing was much better than mine was at the time. But to this day, when you go to my mom's house and you look at that china cabinet, the word Bill is on the china cabinet.
Well, because you can't trust Bill. So I think that's clear.
Well, I think that we've all learned that in the family through the years.
Yeah, I mentioned this at the top of the show. Remember the horrible Driver's Ed films, the crash mm-hmm. films? The day they showed those at Driver's Ed, I left. As I was driving home, I went 60 around a corner where you could only do 30, hit a road sign, snapped it off,
oops,
and damaged my parents' car, the family car, and told my mom that a cat ran out in front of the car, and I was just trying to save the cat.
You're a humanitarian.
Yeah, yeah. We're all a bunch of big liars.
Big liars.
Prince news, Eddie Murphy news, 50 Cent news, and Star Wars news all coming up. And yeah, Dean, I'd be curious to get your take on whether or not this Star Wars thing is going to survive all this. So stand by for
that.
Too
early to tell. Yeah, we'll talk about it.
Well, let's say you'll give us your opinion on that in just a second.
I'll give you my opinion on that in just a second.
I'm going that he's going to say too early.
You can travel Chicago. You'll be calling his name.
That, of course, is the voice of John DeCoste, Dean. The musical director of the show is John DeCoste.
Multi-Grammy Award winner.
Yeah, the Paul Schaefer of the program.
Academy Award winner.
And we'll continue to take your entries in karaoke, the second annual karaoke, long before James Corden ripped off the idea, because we're the first people ever to sing in the car. We were doing this, and we have big prizes this year. Details on the events page at WGNRadio.com. But you can follow me on Twitter at Cochran Show and send me a video or audio of you singing in your car.
Hmm.
And you could also send an email to Steve Cochran Show. Just put the attachment on there, Steve Cochran Show at WGNRadio.com. John will pick the winner, and then 1 week from Sunday night, Dean, on the 15th, we're going to be in Rosemont doing my late night talk show at 7 p.m.
Oh, I like that.
And you remember you were there.
Yeah.
And John and the winner of karaoke will do a duet on stage that night.
What Sunday would that be?
What song will it?
No, what is the date?
Oh, the date's the 15th.
Oh, the 15th.
Yeah, Rosemont Zanies. Just Google Zanies Rosemont and get the tickets, and we'll see you there. All right, so the Star Wars Museum, it's a political football, Dean.
It is.
What are we doing?
It looks like the museum's not going to happen now. because friends in the park are objecting to the new location. The mayor would like to put it there. George Lucas and his wife Melody Hobson would like to put it there, but as you've heard on the news, Melody Hobson says they think they're going to start looking for a new city on this. I think unfortunate. How do you fall on this whole
thing? Well, yeah, I mean, I don't have a great love and affinity for Star Wars like you guys do, but I think it would be good for the city. I do think it needs to, you know, have an appropriate architectural, some sort of matching thing for the lakefront and not look like the Bears redo of Soldier Field. But yeah, I think anything that's good for the city and tourism, I think would be a good thing.
I agree with you.
I understand friends of the park, you know, they're concerned about not building on the lakefront, but there's already a building there on the lakefront.
Yeah, and it's a parking
lot.
No.
Not like you're taking the rain, you know, something, you know, gorgeous like a rainforest and destroying it. There's already a fairly ugly building there right now. Mm-hmm. So it'd be a vast improvement and bring so much money to the city. So that's how I feel about it. That all that said, Steve, today is Star Wars Day.
Oh, I know. Grzanich has lost his mind over this, giggling like a schoolgirl.
As I'm sure you know, that you may run into a Star Wars fan today who will say to you, "May the 4th be with you."
Yeah. Well, I wanted to punch Grzanich over it, and I can't reach you, so go ahead and hit yourself.
May the 4th, Steve, wherever you are. May the 4th be with you. We Star Wars fans are all completely into this today. That said, somebody has put together a mashup of the most popular movie of last year, Star Wars, with the hottest show on Broadway. They got 16 Tony nominations yesterday.
With Hamilton?
A Star Wars Hamilton mashup. Here's just a little bit of it.
The word got around. I said, this kid has been trained, man. Obi-Wan Kenobi put the force inside his brain, man. He blew up the Death Star. His loss was the Rebels' gain. And the galaxy would know his name. What's your name, man?
Luke, the son of Anakin.
All performed in the style of
that is tremendous.
Hamilton. I've got it up at WGNTV.com. This is trending, though. I mean, a lot of you may have already seen
well
this.
Done.
But really, really genius. And just, you know, furthers my dorkdom even more. And apparently Steve's, I didn't know that Steve was also...
Well, I'm a Hamilton fan.
Yeah.
Even though I couldn't get tickets. But
September 27th in Chicago, Steve. That's when it opens here in Chicago. First city out of New York will be Chicago, the new Private Bank Theater, formerly the Bank of America Theater, formerly the Schubert Theater, formerly the LaSalle Bank Theater. They change the name like every 2 weeks.
Well, I'm always hitting you up on the inside man to buy tickets, so of course you'll send that to me.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, we're gonna all go together and dressed up.
Give me a Prince update.
Powder wigs. This is a bizarre story that came out yesterday. There's a doctor, he's a national authority on opiate addiction treatment, who was called by representatives of Prince the day before Prince died. They called this guy to come to Paisley Park as soon as he possibly could. He couldn't get there that day. Said he would be there the next day. That next day is when they found Prince dead in the elevator. A meeting was set up with a Dr. Howard Kornfeld. He is a leading expert, all of this according to the Minneapolis Star Tribune. So it furthers the speculation that
the Percocet addiction.
Percocet story, whether he's using it, maybe even addicted to it because of pain that he was under.
Yeah, again, I knew him just a teeny little bit, but the people that I stay in touch with who knew him very well said, not a chance. It's, you know, crack, heroin, meth, none of that. But an opioid painkiller addiction based on the pain that he had from stage stuff, I could see that.
Yeah, and it doesn't sound like, you know, this was a recreational use of Percocet. This was used because he was in severe pain from all of his acrobatics on stage, really, and in high heel shoes.
Right.
As Steve can tell you from wearing high heel shoes all the time. Very painful.
I used to annoy Prince whenever I'd see him because I'd put heels on too because I thought he wanted me to and then I'd still be way taller. All right, now if I'm right about this, Eddie Murphy has 8 children.
9 children now.
Yeah. Haka wa?
9. He just had...
At some point, don't you go, that's enough?
An
Osmond?
He's got a new girlfriend now, Steve. You got to leave your mark somewhere, I guess.
That's one word for it.
Got a new girlfriend named Paige Butcher. Mm-hmm. They had a little girl, and listen to her name, Izzy Una.
Izzy Una Murphy.
I-Z-Z-Y.
Sounds like a question. Izzy Una Murphy?
Una's one. Maybe that has a little...
O-O-N-A.
Okay, or not.
O-O-N-A, so I don't know. It's not like...
Not the common spelling.
That's what I... what I thought.
I'm looking at a picture of this Paige Butcher now. She's fairly attractive.
Attractive young lady.
Yeah, if you like that.
She is. So 9 children now for Eddie Murphy. His most recent was a 9-year-old daughter with former Spice Girl Melanie Brown.
So he's got a Spice Girl daughter, he's got the Paige Butcher daughter, and then Nicole had 6?
I
guess 7?
I'm not sure how the rest... Was it all with one woman?
I think so.
The previous 7?
Yeah. I'm sorry, he had one with Chris Rock. That was very early on. He and Rock adopted. Do you know who they adopted? It was Kevin. Kevin Hart.
Really?
Yeah, they adopted Kevin Hart.
Oh, he's going to be cute when he grows up, isn't he?
50 Cent's in the news as well, and 50 did a really stupid thing.
This is so stupid.
And he made fun of an autistic kid.
He was at the at the airport, ran into a janitor there, and was teasing the guy, was accusing him of being high on drugs. What's the matter with you? You're high on drugs. The 19-year-old is autistic. 50 didn't know that ahead of time and has issued an apology saying that he's very sorry for offending the young man. He contacted him. In addition to tweeting it, he contacted him personally and apologized to his family as well. But why do you got to do stuff like that?
Well, no, you're a grown-up idiot.
You got to do stuff like that.
Yeah, so stop it. I think the person, the young man, should be able to shoot 50. I mean, everybody else has.
It's very true.
So, all right, buddy. Thank you for all that.
See you tomorrow.
That's Dean. It's 8:30, and your big story is coming up in just a second. The Wintrust Community Bank Hour continues. Dean, sponsored by the Captain James A. Lovell Federal Healthcare Center.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
We go to Coach Q now.
You happy with what you saw from Crawford?
Getting back in the real time and getting exposed to playing a real game. I think that was needed, and it was good to get it going in the regular season.
What'd you see from Crawford Saturday night?
Throwing him in there for the first playoff game without playing any or getting any action would have been tough on him.
I just realized that Dave Enn had already asked you about Crawford because...
Yeah, okay, good.
Oh, this is awkward.
But here's the deal. Dave asked him about Crow, and I was covering another point in the show with Sambra.
Is that what you
Producer Sambra, yeah.
Okay.
We're talking about something.
I wish you weren't a liar.
Oh, you're going to get it all day now.
Coach, I was going to ask you about Crawford. What you thought of him.
Idiot! So stupid. What a dumb question.
Ah, I tell you what, Jake's getting it done. Give me a little who for the coach, too, will you? Got a little who? You know the coach's rules. Coach must hear the who, or he can't go on without the who. I don't know if you know that.
Right.
Yeah. He has to actually have the who music because that fires him up for the segment, which, of course, is always an award winner.
You think my shoes are made of leather, but I'll substitute for another guy. I look pretty tall, but my heels are high. The simple things you see are all complicated. Look pretty young, but I'm just validated.
Yeah. We want to thank the people at Hooters for sponsoring the Coach Q Show all regular season long. Remember, Hooters, it's not just a place where you get wings. It's pretty great. No, that's not their slogan. Coach Q joins us now. How are you, my friend?
Doing all right. How you doing?
Still trying to get over you two mocking me over my repeat of the Crawford question a couple of weeks ago.
I was wondering how he's doing.
Nice.
Well, listen, it didn't end the way we wanted. Certainly didn't end in the way you wanted. But when you look back at the season, well, do you look back at the season? Or are you the next one foot in front of the other guy?
Well, I definitely, we recapped, and I thought regular season wise, we did some really good things, yep. And making the playoffs was a great achievement. And then we're in a tough division, and we walked into a real good team that needed to win in the worst way in the first round, and played like it, and we had some moments that we felt that that was a winnable series, and at the end, missing out by a goal leaves a little bit even more frustration now that as you're watching it, and you get to think about it a little bit more, and. What could have been, and in the meantime, I'd look at it. Okay, let's recapture some energy here. We pick up 6 weeks of rest, and let's make sure we go back to that. First of all, we got to get in the playoffs, but apply it at the right time next year, knowing that you know, I think we had all the ingredients of a team that could win.
Yeah, you know, again, this is not an excuse. This is a reality, and these are facts. You guys have played a lot of hockey. And for a guy that played it at the highest level, your legs need time to recover, right, summer-wise?
Well, whether it's legs, whether it's your focus, whether it's the intensity, you know, I know, like, the last three summers have been extremely short. And, you know, that's why making the playoffs was a real good and not an easy thing to do.
Right.
And finding it, and we try to balance it out. We try to give rest and try to be fresh. We came into the playoffs relatively healthy and as good a shape as we could expect. And so... We were hoping that everybody was we're fine, and now you get in a long series, and you got to beat four teams four times in a real hard environment. So it's a real tough task, and that's why winning a championship in the NHL is as tough and the most satisfying and rewarding achievement you're ever going to get, and to do it back to back years is a lot to ask, and that's why it hasn't been done for so long.
Toughest trophy in sports, I think.
Well, I think it could be, for sure. I mean, yeah. Basketball, they play 4x7 is like we do, but I think the hockey game might be a little bit more taxing physically.
Yeah, I mean, if we get to a point, there's plenty of action under the hoops, or as Ted Cruz called them, the rings, but you're not doing it on skates, and you're not being pummeled while you're trying to make a pass or collect a puck. It's a different environment. Not that basketball players and NBA players aren't great athletes, right, because they are. Dave, say hi to Coach Q. Yeah,
Coach, good morning. You've told us before about how much hockey you watch with teams other than your own. Are you able now to watch the other games that are going on? Are you watching the Blues Star series?
Well, do you think he's watching the Real Housewives? He's Coach Q, for crying
out. Well, maybe he's doing other things. That's why I'm asking the question.
I try to do other things, but last night when the games are on, we had all three going at once, and then tonight one, and then the other night one, but I've watched all the games, and I think certain teams look real good. The West is still, St. Louis looks a little bit better than Dallas right now, and the other series, San Jose looked really good in the first two games, but you don't discount Nashville ever. And the East is still, wide open. That Washington-Pittsburgh series is fun to watch, and Tampa Bay knows how to win. So you could argue everybody right now. I got no rooting interests.
You picking anybody?
I thought San Jose actually looked as good as anybody here has in this round.
And the one thing that fans need to remember, and I don't think Chicago Blackhawks fans even need to hear me say this, but I'll say it anyway. This team, three's not enough. One goal remains the same. They're going to come back this summer for convention and into camp and into the fall, and I think be hungrier than ever. Am I right or wrong about that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, watching the playoffs creates an appetite, the disappointment, not being a part of it. Our team gets a lot of attention and a lot of focus and a lot of talk, and teams are noticeably ready for us. But at the same time, I think that challenge is always in place, that we welcome it, and we know we got to be on our game. And we got a lot of players that are not just good players. They want to be the best they can be regularly and game in, game out. And that's what makes us a good team. And I think that not being there this year, that's going to be the focus next year. And let's recapture that feeling of what it takes to win and finding a way to get it done.
I know fans are nervous about Shaw possibly not being here next year. And I know Stan, until you get the final salary cap number, can't really say how this roster is going to look. But do you have a gut feeling, Joel, that there will be as much overhaul of the roster this offseason as there was last year?
I don't know if we'll have that much change. I mean, as far as top players, no, Shazi's the one guy that's numbers are probably important, but I think he's the desire by both sides of wanting to stay together is definitely in place. And knowing brings a great ingredient and intangible to our team that's noticed and appreciated. And I think the fans in Chicago love Shazi, and for all the right reasons, same reasons we want to keep him, and hopefully we can find a way to get that done. But other than that, I think you know, we know that we're against it, and trying to find whether it's top free agents or guys that look like they're 30 goal scorers or this or that, they're not out there. And I think that whether it's younger guys coming in filling spots, I thought we did a lot of that earlier on in this year. But I think that's kind of where we're at. We know that with our cap team and our salary cap world, that we got to find a way to win within that structure. And I thought this year we did a real good job off of you know, a tough situation. And I think we're kind of knowing that that's where we're at going into next year. I think that's you know, finding a way to win with what we have is you know, I liked our team this year, and and I see it very comparable going into next year.
Talking with Coach Q, what's on your wish list first, second line defense?
You can never have enough defensemen. You know, if we can add a defense or two, you know, I think we got a nice group to start with, and that would be great. You know, I think Johnny could use a winger or two. I like hosts with Kruger at the end of the year. You know, Artie's line with the Breadman and Kaner is in place. You could always change one of those guys to enhance Johnny's line as an option, but if we don't have to do that, you know, over the course of the year, I'm sure we'll try both options. But we feel that we've got a lot of good options. We got basically formations on four lines, and there's not a lot of additions. And I think that the additions we do make will be you know, give us some energy and some depth as well.
You know, Gordie Howe, Yager, some of these guys who are even older than Hossa amaze me. But Hossa is something else. On top of being a really good guy, he's been playing more than half of his life, I think, now in the NHL. And I don't see that he's lost a step. He looked like he played harder than ever.
He did. He was he arguably one of our best forwards in that series. He was productive. I thought he found another lease on life playing with Krugs and having a responsibility of being more about a checking line. And got production off it, and you know you're going to get that responsibility without the puck, and you know, on the power play is useful. Penalty killing was great. Scored some clutch goals, but he really did have a real good playoffs for us, and I thought that that was a good way to end it, knowing that at his stage he'll get us some excitement going into the summer and coming refreshing, although I think he'll be in the World Cup in the fall, and I look forward to seeing them there as well. So it should be a fun summer for a lot of our guys, knowing that hey, they got a chance to rest and then get excited about the World Cup. And then, you know, when we get Blackhawks started, we'll be ready to take off.
Does the captain, Toews, sit down with you after the Blues thing and say, you know, maybe we look at this, maybe we look at that? Or do you guys just sit down and go, well, that sucked. Next year, that's not going to happen.
Well, we you know, we had our exit meetings with all the players, and we talk about individually where they're at, their performance was at, things to think about going forward. And you know, some guys we ask their opinion, some guys we don't. And obviously with Johnny, we you know, like to hear what he has to say. And Johnny always says the right things, and you know, he has a real good pulse of the team and himself, and very honest as well. So it's a you know, it's one of those summers where we're going to learn a little bit here, and at some point, I'm sure there's going to be some frustration as we watch it go along here, knowing what could have been ifs and buts. But we've been pretty fortunate in these same situations, so okay. I don't think there's any complaining.
You mentioned the way this team could look next year, and maybe without a ton of overhaul, but you've got some young guys who we've seen glimpses of, have been up for a game or two here and there, or even a little more than that, guys like Caro and Hartman and Bond and Hinostroza. Is it the time for any of those guys, Joel, going into next year? Is that all going to depend on training camp?
I would think those guys, and we had a couple guys that just came into the organization from college at the end of their years.
Like Mott.
Mott, you know, the Johnson kid. You know, I think those guys can move ahead. I think that's you know, whoever's deserving of it. We thought that those guys this year had chances to come up, and they all did a good job. And sustaining it is the challenge. So they got a year under their belt at the pro level. They're going to get a year under their belt, and You know, whether it's by committee or some guys, somebody's definitely going to grab it. I always feel there's a surprise or two in training camp, and would expect somebody to look like they belong there, and hopefully they can keep getting better and solidify that NHL job and keep improving.
What are you going to do for fun? You got a trip planned?
Got about four little plans here coming up here. One that I'm looking forward to, even though I wish I can't go this weekend.
What do you mean you wish you can't go?
Yeah, when I can go to the Derby, it's never good because we're not playing. So it's a nice treat because you know to go, but I'd rather be playing hockey. So
I understand. I understand that.
That's my wish.
Who do you like?
It's wide open. I still haven't done my homework yet. And everybody's talking about Nyquist. We've got the hockey horse, and the owner is from Windsor, so have some rooting interest there, and we'll see.
You got how many in your stable? You still got two or three?
I have two horses right now.
Yeah, they coming? We're going to hear about them?
I don't think we're hearing too much about them right now. They're both coming off injury and IR, and the other guy's on IR. So I don't know. It's a
glue.
The trainer tells me they're ready to go, eventually they're going to be out there running. But they're both decent horses. So
is it bad that you named one glue and the other one factory? Should we read anything into that?
Soon to be. Yeah.
Upper body or lower body?
Hey, Coach, before I let you go, you played tennis with Eric from Eric and Kathy earlier this year. And
played golf with him yesterday.
All right, now hold on a second.
No.
Hold on a second.
Oh, Coach.
What?
I know.
What kind of
design? Not by design, very coincidentally.
You were out of his golf course.
Yeah, I was out playing.
You told me you
joined up with us for a couple holes.
You told me you didn't want to play golf. This has got to be personal between you and I.
I played my one round all year.
Oh,
yesterday.
Please.
So Eric probably latched on
one and done.
He probably latched on to coaches foursome, though, right?
Well, of course.
Yeah, they had two of them. We had three, and we played a few holes.
All right, so what are you and I going to do? We got to hang out this summer. You know you want to.
I can't wait. What are we
going
to do?
I don't know. Am I going on one of your trips?
No way.
We'll play tennis, though, Coach. We'll get ready for a doubles tournament.
Maybe we'll go to Arlington Park or something.
That's a good call. All right, we're going to Arlington. All right, and tell your girlfriend Eric when you see him. I said hi.
Okay, I will.
Hey, in all seriousness, thank you. Thank you for great stuff week to week. The fans always love your honesty and obviously love your talent. And we're so lucky to have you here in Chicago. Thanks for the friendship and thanks for being on. We appreciate it very much.
All right, it's had fun. Enjoy. Right. Have a good summer.
All right, buddy. Thanks. See you later. Have a good summer.
It's weird hearing that in May.
Have a good summer. It does not sound like Coach Q and I are hanging out.
You see
that was kind of
good. You see Eric going, hey, Coach! Coach, it's Eric. Remember we played tennis? Coach, hey. Next thing you know, he's in his... Coach Q just goes, let him play a hole so we can get rid of him.
Right.
How did you know he was playing?
No, I knew he played tennis with Eric.
Right.
So I was going to ask
him. Like you knew they played together.
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay.
No, that's why I'm outraged. Look at me. Look at how outraged.
That is outrageous.
Steve Turner, do you need help getting that other knife
out
of your
back? It's outrageous. Just outrageous. And then he's not going to take me on any of his trips? I don't know. You know what we need, Coach and I? Couples counseling.
In the fall.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
WGN Radio is the sound of Chicago.
720 WGN.
Nine 13 now as we continue. The day after, the sun did come up this morning. Sadly, the sun now has a hairpiece. But we're hoping for the best. More on Trump-pocalypse later. You know, I am blessed in so many ways, but one of the ways is to know people who do so much for this city and for the people of this city, and I consider our guest to be one of Chicago's great people, and that's Gilda's Club CEO, Laura Jane Hyde. And I haven't seen you in forever.
I know.
You look fabulous. You haven't aged a day.
Thanks for not wearing glasses.
You really do. You look terrific.
Well, thank you.
Before we get to the event coming up for Gilda's Club, tell everybody about Gilda's Club and dispel maybe your top three myths about Gilda's Club, if you would.
Okay. Gilda's Club is for everyone,
mm-hmm.
men and women, children, anyone impacted by cancer, so family members and friends. Another myth is that, they won't have a program that supports what I need,
mm-hmm.
but we have education, we offer healthy lifestyles, we have social activities, we offer support, we offer referrals. So I would challenge anyone that thinks that Gilda's Club doesn't have something for them to call me. I'll take them on a tour. We'll find something that will be of help.
And when someone's diagnosed, one of the best things, and I think one of the most powerful things, is to be able to talk to people who are walking the same walk you're walking. And you guys do a wonderful job of that.
Well, our members and our participants do a wonderful job. We provide the framework.
Right.
Yeah.
But to sit down in a group, for instance, with other women who may be dealing with the same thing, or to have kids. Because one of the things we know when mom or dad are sick or you know, older brother, older sister, whomever, the healthy sibling, healthy in quotes, doesn't get as much attention, doesn't know what to do with their emotions, all that.
Absolutely.
And you serve that need as well.
We just had our teen essay contest, and the winner was a young gentleman who's in high school, and he wrote so eloquently about his seven-year-old sister's experience that, and this young man for the first time probably articulated his feelings in a room full of teens that knew what he was going through. I mean, that just doesn't happen.
So gutsy, but that's that power of that group thing.
Yes, yes.
Back it up to the history of the club. Gilda was diagnosed when? Gilda Radner we're talking about.
She was diagnosed in 1986, I believe, and passed away in 1989.
And what did we know then as compared to what we know medically now?
Oh, my gosh. There's
been a world of difference.
Absolutely, absolutely. P.S., she would have been 70 this year.
How about that? How about that?
Yeah.
And it was, you know, largely a death sentence when you got it, especially if you're stage three.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it better news today?
It's better news because the advancements in medicine continue to develop and there's greater awareness and people are encouraged to be their own medical advocate. And all those developments help create an environment where if people have access to care, they can get care. There's still a number of areas where people don't have access to care. And so meeting the needs of the underserved is equally as important and a focus for ours.
And how do you pay your bills?
How do we pay? Through the generosity of others.
Right.
Yeah.
So in other words, if you walk into Gilda's Club, you're not going, hey, write a check or you don't talk to anybody.
No, in fact, we do the opposite.
Right. Yeah, because you don't want there to be any barriers to the mission, which is to help people deal with what they're dealing with.
Absolutely. And cancer is a financial burden no matter where you lie on the spectrum.
Right.
So.
Andrea, say hi.
It's a wonderful, wonderful organization. We were talking off the air, too. My grandmother died of ovarian cancer. But again, this was in the 80s when you were saying there was not a lot of awareness. And as again, she was diagnosed with in stage four. So there wasn't a lot of hope. Now, so much different. We were both talking about survivors, you know, friends who have had ovarian cancer. What I think is amazing about Gilda's Club, and I remember this from way back when, you never turn anybody away, ever, which is remarkable.
Just find the red door and you're in.
Right.
Absolutely. And we've made it easier by expanding into the hospitals. So we're at Northwestern, Rush, Advocate Christ, Mount Sinai, and Lurie Children's. We go into any classroom through our GCC at school program. We go into the workplace with GCC at work, and we're in the faith community. So we're just trying to be in every single community so that people can access us whenever and wherever they need us.
When someone's initially diagnosed, they have to grieve the life they had to the life they're now fighting for, and that's a process. But you brought this up to me years ago, and I think it's a really powerful thing. If you love somebody that's going through this, maybe it's your best friend, maybe it's a relative, maybe it's somebody you work with, whatever, you know, give them a little space and time, but encourage them to come see you guys. Because initially, I think there's some pushback, right? They maybe don't want to talk about it.
Well, everybody's different, right? So if you're an information gatherer and you go through an experience like being diagnosed with cancer, you're going to gather information. If you're somebody that doesn't seek the support of others, you probably won't initially do that, which is why we have so many different programs that people can access and support, find support that will resonate with them.
And if somebody wants to bring their friend, some healthy person wants to bring their friend, they're more than welcome.
Absolutely. The caregiver goes through distress in a different way, but related to the diagnosis of someone they love.
It's Gilda's Club, and coming up, we're giving you plenty of notice now. Plenty of notice to make dinner plans. It's the Agents of Hope dinner. It's an amazing night. It'll happen Thursday, June 23rd, 5:30 reception, 6:30 dinner at the Four Seasons. Oh, that shack on East Delaware. It's a great night. It's a great dinner, and you're supporting a great cause. How do people get tickets?
They can call Gilda's Club Chicago at 312-464-9900 or visit our website at gildasclubchicago.org.
And GildasClubChicago.org has tons of resources and frequently asked questions and all of those things as well.
Absolutely.
Are you optimistic about where we're going with research?
I am. I am. And I think what that will result in is a greater increase in the survivorship population, which means the need for a program like Gildas Club won't go away, but it will be a different tone as we welcome survivors and greater numbers of survivors.
Well, it's not a cliche to say the best day of your life would be if it did go away.
You know, absolutely.
If there is no need, but realistically,
right.
There's going to be a need, and right. Serving that emotional and informational need and a place to go is a big deal.
Yeah, when it goes away, I'll come and run coffee for you.
You can come in anytime you want. You know that. If people want to make a donation, can they do it through the website?
Absolutely.
Okay, and when you talk to people in the medical community, which you do all the time, you know, the National Institutes of Health and all the major research bodies that need to be supported by government dollars and all of those things. Fortunately, you don't because of the generosity of people. But are doctors concerned about maybe this next election and how much money is going to be coming medically towards medical research and things of that nature?
You know, I think because we're for everyone, politics in terms of partisanship is something we stay away from. We are part of the cancer support community, and we do have a policy institute that advocates on behalf of the millions of survivors.
The greater cause.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, nice to see you.
You too. Thank you
How's
so much.
How's your staff? Everybody behaving?
Yeah. I've got a great team. Team.
Yeah. It's the CEO of Gildas Club, Laura Jane Hyde. Give them the website one more time.
GildasClubChicago.org.
And 312-464-9900?
Yes.
Not just a pretty face. I remember the phone number. I'm telling you that right
Never
now.
Never get glasses.
Exactly. Yeah, for me. Don't get a mirror in my case. You're welcome here anytime. You know that.
Thank you.
Nice to see you. 921. We're back after this on 720 WGN. As we continue at 926, your texts are still welcome for lies you told your mom. This is our text question today leading up to Mother's Day. Mary this morning, Mary Vandeveld, very courageously coughed up.
You
courageously
forced her.
And insisted on telling me the lies she told her mother. Give me one that your kids told you, Mary Vandeville.
Well, I think I went away for the weekend or the night. My husband and I left my daughter in charge. I don't remember how old she was at the time.
We're not going to have a party, Mom, I promise.
Exactly. Nothing going on. We'll clean the house. Got home, and I did notice a beer can in the garage. I found one.
Is there a crack in the egg?
And they confronted them. They initially denied it and got it out of them. Yeah.
And,
I knew it.
She actually put them in a hard wooden chair and had a swinging light bulb above their head when she questioned them.
But, Mom, it was in the garage.
Right. Beer
we
in the garage
in
is
the
okay.
House.
Oh, beer just, in the garage
just
is okay.
The can found its way into the house. Yeah. Exactly.
Are you ready to
no,
confess?
No, the can was in the garage.
Andre Darlis, are you ready to confess?
I don't really have any confessions.
Oh, come
stop.
On.
No, I was good. I was scared of my mom. I have this very, she's a wonderful woman, but she was Greek. And
your mom is so sweet.
I was scared of my mom. I could think of two things. One does involve a car, but as I said, the disclaimer on that is we've all done dumb things with
mom's car. I'm just looking for you to, you know, clear your conscience.
The biggest lie I ever told, and I got caught in the middle of it too. I'm not good at lying. I got caught right in the middle of it. I was at school and I was speaking to my mom on a Sunday morning, and she called me for something and she said, "Where were you?" And I said, because she called early in the morning to tell me something and I didn't answer.
Wait, this is after you're living on your own?
No, this is in college. So this
college.
Is pre-cell phone.
Okay,
so I still had the phone attached to the wall. She said, "I called you this morning. You didn't answer." I said, "Oh, I was at church." She said, "Really? Greek church doesn't start till 10. I said, "Oh, well, I was at the library and then I was going to go to..." It just kept getting deeper and deeper
Right. And then you coughed it up. By the way, where were you?
Studying with a friend
.
Who was a boy at his apartment.
Is that what you were calling it, studying?
That's what we called it. I'm sticking to it.
Texters say, "I broke a window and my sister told my mom, Hopalong Cassidy did it, and then he rode out west." Another texter, "I started a fire in our basement. The firefighters saved my life because they told my parents it was an electrical fire. I was told by the firefighters, take this one to the grave, kid. My lie to my mother, I went over to Deborah's house. My mother knew I was there anyway."
Oh, I thought Deborah was a made-up person.
Yeah, well, you never know. "Worst lie I told my mom, he's not married, Mom. I knew he was."
Oh.
Dave, by the way, and I believe you when you tell me this, Dave. Dave, would you like to tell us a lie you told your mom?
I have no lies I told my mom.
And why is that?
because I never lied to my mother.
Oh, come on.
And Mary? No, wait a minute. This is true, and I told Steve and Andrea this off the air. I never lied to my mother. My mother was a saint. My mother was a wonderful woman.
What about your father?
Well, maybe a couple times, but get back to me on Father's Day.
Not even a little tiny, tiny lie?
No, really not, because I never would have been able to look her in the face.
Really?
Yeah. Hey, if you knew my mom, you'd understand it.
Well, my mom was a sweet woman. I lied to her.
Come on, not mom.
You and I are different people.
Well, why is your mom better than my mom?
But I didn't say she was better.
I think that's what you're saying.
We're just worse.
But not one lie, not like, oh, we didn't get our report cards yet.
No, because my report cards were always good. Oh,
what about when you told your mom this is a year for the Cubs? I bet you said that every single
I don't think
year.
I ever said that to her.
All right. You know, I actually believe Dave. I really do.
Didn't you ever go somewhere and you didn't go to the same place you told your mom you were going to?
No.
Like J. Edgar Hoover. Like when you were delivering a paper to J. Edgar Hoover and he wanted you to come in the house. Well, remember that one time?
Well, there was that.
No.
No, you know what? There were not places that you weren't supposed to go because we just kind of went everywhere. And
did you guys live in downtown D.C.?
Not downtown, no. No.
You're Maryland and Virginia?
No, or? In D.C., but not in urban area. I mean, not that. But I mean, back then, you did this.
You rode
your bike wherever you wanted to
go.
Exactly.
And you played ball all day. You came back to eat.
When you were hungry and it was getting dark and cold, you went home.
Right. But you never lied
about
that.
And we liked it.
You never lied about that. You never said, Mom, I couldn't get home at 6 and you were really playing ball later than you said you would. None of those? Not even a little tiny, tiny lie? Okay. We all lie.
That's not really a lie. It's an excuse.
Oh, it's a white lie.
Different.
Wait, don't you like that? Do you guys remember? That's a white lie.
Yeah.
What's the difference?
Well, Dave's white. It's 9:31. We're back after this on 720 WGN. Trump wants to change the presidential walk-up song to this. It's 9:42. The great Tim O'Brien wrote Trump Nation, and then Trump tried to have him killed or something because he actually reported the truth about his net worth. We found Tim O'Brien at a bunker in Nova Scotia. Apparently, he's already moved. Good morning, Mr. O'Brien. How are you?
Good morning, Steve. How are you? For the record, I don't think he tried to get me killed, but you made me laugh.
Nice to talk to you again. You know, we got to a point over the past month or so that we were going through the acceptance phase of our five stages of grief for America. But I was surprised to see Cruz end it last night.
I was, too. You know, I especially on a day where Trump had attacked his family, had attacked Cruz's family, and you know, engaged in conspiracy theorizing about Cruz's father being involved with Lee Harvey Oswald and the JFK assassination. I mean, the stuff got really over the top. And there wouldn't have been much for Cruz to do to stay in the rest of the race. And so it surprised me that he backed out. And it does make Trump the presumptive nominee now at this point.
You know him better than I do. You wrote a book about him. You've written about him. You've been with him. You've spent time with him. You were on Trump Force One. Are we in the middle of a Trumpocalypse, or can we somehow survive this?
Well, look, I think he's going to be the Republican nominee. I think voters have to really take him to account for most of what he says most of the time. You know, last night when he gave his victory speech after the Indiana results, he said he's going to bring jobs back to coal country, and he's going to be coal miners' best friend. And he makes these sweeping statements about things like this without putting any kind of programmatic teeth onto any of it. And so how exactly is he going to bring coal jobs back to coal country in a very specific way? Because the reality is he's not going to be able to do that flat out. And you know, I think it's a moment for the Republican Party to consider what it is and what it wants to be. It's a moment for conservative voters to think about what is conservatism in the Trump era, because he's not a classic conservative by any stretch. And then thirdly, I think for the media and the public to think about how we've turned the political process into a blood sport and spectacle as opposed to a thoughtful accounting of real issues that matter in the lives of Americans.
Yeah, and there's a lot of hand-wringing about, well, if we'd only done this, we'd only done that. You can't change a minute of the past. What you can change is to learn by this and go forward.
Yeah, you know, the one of the things within among Republicans right now is there's a lot of talk about every one of Trump's opponents waited too long to try to define him and to respond to his negative attacks, and that they should have tried to define who he was earlier. And I think the reason they didn't try to define who he was earlier is because no one took him seriously until far too late. And I don't think that that's going to happen. You know, the Clinton machine is a tested kind of, you know, battleground of political operatives who know how to wage these kind of battles. So I think what we're going to be in for next isn't just a Trump apocalypse. It's going to be a political apocalypse where you're going to see some very brutal characterizing going on.
The debates will be ugly. And, you know, I said this when Bush was president and everybody wanted to start calling him stupid. You can have problems with the man, or in this case, the woman who occupies the office if Hillary wins. But when you crush the person in the office in a completely careless way, you have to understand you're reflecting on the office for the rest of the world. And the opinion of the rest of the world can change based on how we all treat the person who ends up getting elected. Having said that, Tim, I'm a complete hypocrite because I'll crush Trump if he's elected.
Well, look, I was saying to my wife probably 4 months ago, 5 months ago, remember how everyone used to talk about how funny it was that Italy had Berlusconi as a leader?
Yeah.
And, of course, something like this can only happen in Italy, where, a business person with a checkered history and a high-rolling lifestyle ends up running the country. And lo and behold, we now have our own Berlusconi.
You think he wants it, even now? Because my opinion was he didn't in the beginning. He had no idea how big this would get. And I think the change, and I'm not exaggerating here, outside of the power, the change in lifestyle for Donald Trump would be negative, except for the fact everybody's taking care of you and your every whim is answered to in some regard. But he's going to deal with people ripping him every single day. And we know how thin his skin is, and he never had to deal with it. Do you think he still wants the gig, or would he love to find a way out of it?
I think the core thing you have to understand about Donald Trump, and it was, I think, part of the core profile of him that's in Trump Nation, the book I wrote, is that I don't think he's in this at all for the end goal of being in the White House. He's in this because he loves attention.
Right.
And he thrives on attention. And Donald Trump is happier right now than he's ever been in his entire life.
Because the whole world's talking about him.
The whole world's talking about him. And that matters to him more than anything else, except perhaps, you know, how wealthy he's perceived. I think the fact that he gets attention and that he's perceived as a mega billionaire are two of the sort of polar stars of his life. And I think that all he wants to do is stay in this because he'll be visible, which is why he's never really come out with a platform of any sort politically. He's got a pogo stick, and he just bounces around and bounces around from sensational topic to sensational topic.
Man, so it's a great visual.
Yeah, I think he wants it. I think he wants it because he's getting attention. I don't think he wants it because he's got any well-thought-through political or public policy platform that he wants to put in motion.
Very scary. I know we grabbed you last minute. I really appreciate it, and thanks for doing it.
Always good to be on with you, Steve. Have a great day.
Thanks, Tim O'Brien. Fine writer and a good guy, and like I said, Trump Nation. You ever read Trump Nation?
I never did. I'm going to now.
It's good. It's really good. It's really good. Tim O'Brien's really good, but the book's really good as well, and it gives you some insight into the man who would be president.
Yeah, insight into the fact that he really probably doesn't want to be president, just wants the attention.
I've never believed he wanted it. I've never believed he wanted it. And I never, ever, ever believed that he thought it would get this far, and I don't think he believes it this morning. And I think if he allows himself in his narcissistic, twisted brain to at some point go, whoa, 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 I got to do the job? What do you mean I got to run the country? That's when it gets a little scary. I mean, think about his life. Even if he's only worth $1 billion as opposed to the $10 billion he claims.
Yeah.
He's got a nice jet. He's got a hot wife. He's got kids that love him.
He's got, you know, the place in New York. He can come here and claim this tower is his.
Yeah. Well, the White House would be a definite downgrade.
He likes to play a lot of golf.
Yeah.
And he's a pretty good golfer, by the way. He's got a lot of good things going on. That all changes when you're president of the United States and every day people line up to tell you you suck. And don't think he wouldn't be reading all the tweets himself.
That's right. All the hate mail.
9:50, Bill and Wendy coming up. 7:20, WGN.
Thank you, darling.
Now, you know who this is? Did an appearance out in Naperville about a month ago. And I mentioned this, you know, the Monday after, but I don't remember if we ever got a chance to play it. This is Rose Colella, one of Chicago's great jazz artists.
She's great.
It's off a CD called Cocktail. And the website, rosecolella.com, C-O-L-E-L-L-A. She plays Hemingway's every week. I think it's Wednesday nights. And, you know, does a lot of Green Mill stuff, too.
Don't you love good jazz? Listen to this.
Yeah,
so good. Tremendous.
We haven't even heard her sing yet. This is the band. And I'm going to make you wait. You'll have to get the disc or check her out online to hear her sing. A couple of more mom texts. Mom texts, biggest lies I ever told my mom. Always got, this is a texter, always got after school detention, so I told my mom the school changed and there were 10 periods instead of 9.
No.
Plausible.
Hey, Jake, you had a significant lie that you confessed off the air to your mother. What was it?
She probably won't even remember this now because I got caught several times. But when I was a young lad, under the age of 21.
Mm-hmm.
So like 2 years ago?
Yeah. And I came home. Might have had a few Diet Pepsis.
So you had adult beverages?
Yes.
You stunk of drink.
Yes. And my excuse was that I was around people drinking and that they may have spilled on me. And that was the reason.
Yeah.
That never works.
Wait, spilled into your mouth?
Or? Yeah.
Well, you know, you...
This is like the husband. This is like the husband that comes home from a business trip and he's covered in sequins, and he goes, "Yeah, we were at a restaurant. They were at a kid's birthday party, and no, not a strip club. No, it wasn't a strip club."
But at the time, you really think it's a good idea. You're like, they won't notice.
Nah, mom doesn't know. Sandberg's hiding. Is she not have a lie she wants to confess about her mother?
She's got to have a lie.
She's been very quiet this morning. Not Dave Ennett quiet about it, but very.
She
quiet.
Wants us to ignore her.
You think
why.
Dave Ennett's lying about his lie?
No, I think Dave's telling the truth.
Come on, absolutely, my kids are all mad at me now. So, you know, somebody else has to confess.
Here's another texter. My brother got in a fight with his buddy, punched and shattered his the car window. Next day he told my mom it was due to a drastic change in atmospheric pressure.
No. My friend went on a date one time and the guy did that.
That's tremendous.
Bad story.
All right, Sandra, confess.
Well, first of all, my mom is actually coming in studio on Friday, so... You guys are all safe by barrier of phone and whatnot.
Yeah.
But I didn't lie too much about the big stuff because I used to like to shock the heck out of them with the truth. Like, I came home early from a date once and they said, why are you home so soon? I'm like, because he thought we were going to have sex.
Wow.
So I like to really.
So you tried to cut him off with too much honesty.
Yes. But I did lie once.
Yeah, you must have lied at some point.
I did lie. There was this appetizer that was really popular when I was a kid. It was a pickle wrapped in lunch meat. Like, and they were on a deli tray. And
does sound healthy.
And at a family thing at my grandma's house, they had it. And I thought, well, I'll eat this because I like pickles and lunch meat. And I ate a bite and no one told me there was cream cheese lining it to keep the lunch meat on the pickle. So instead of just throwing it in the trash, I went down in the basement and threw it behind a couch in the basement.
In your house?
In my grandma's house.
In your grandma's
Why?
House.
Why?
Because you're a kid. It made sense at the time.
Wasn't there a dog you could give it to?
No dog. So it was found because I did a poor job, apparently. And everyone knew I was the one that took it. No adult would go down there and drop a pickle.
I thought you were going to tell me it was 2 months later and suddenly they thought there was a body in the basement because of the stench.
I thought you were going to say you were eating pickles because you were pregnant and you made up
no,
a lie.
No, I was a little kid, but they asked me if it was, you know, my mom, did you do this? And I said no. And I stood it. Till this day, I've said no, but
that's
it was my
lie?
Pickle in my
meat. Well, it's because she told the truth about all the bad stuff she did.
That's such a weak lie.
Hey, it was a pickle. Apparently you didn't
pickle
hear.
Wrapped in Carl Budding lunch meat.
We're talking about a pickle and lunch meat here.
With cream cheese.
She still feels guilty about it.
I remember the sound it made when I threw, because it was one of those gray basement, cement basement, and I flopped it on the ground. And it was like splat.
It was a splat.
I love when a kid thinks that's the best idea in the world at that moment.
Oh, that's nice.
Hide the pickle. No, not like that. This audience.